This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. The movement to abolish policing and prisons is one that I've returned to repeatedly on this program, bringing on leaders who are deeply engaged in the work of moving resources away from the carceral state and into the programs that actually keep us safe. Today, we'll continue our coverage of abolition, but specifically at one part of the equation that gets little attention, the judiciary. My guest is Yvette Ale Farlito, an abolitionist movement leader and co-founder and executive director of La Defensa. As a queer femme and a formerly undocumented person, Yvette has been organizing and leading anti-carceral campaigns in California for nearly a decade. They've helped found and lead multiple coalitions, including Justice LA and Reimagine LA, supporting historic victories, including ending LA County's $3.5 billion jail expansion plan in 2019, and the passing of Measure J in 2020, which secured hundreds of millions of county dollars for community investment. Welcome, Yvette.
Thank you so much for having me, Sonali.
So the last time we had you on our show was to discuss a story you had written for Yes Magazine called Judging the Judges. Let's pick up there. Your organization, La Defensa, has seen how the judiciary has been part of the detrimental aspect of and harmful aspect of the carceral system, has dehumanized those people that have come before the courts. And so you started this fantastic and innovative online tool called Rate My Judge. So let's remind our audience about this tool, Rate My Judge, and why it was that you and your organization felt the need to shine a spotlight on a group of people that wield a lot of power, but don't always get to be held very accountable.
Yes, let's talk about it. So Rate My Judge is essentially a Yelp for judges. So chances are at some point in your life, you may come into a courtroom or a loved one may be going into a courtroom for a variety of reasons, from housing disputes, of course, criminal proceedings, a driving infraction. There are so many reasons why our community members go before a judge. But what many of us are not attuned to, or who are these people? How are they approaching their role as a judge? What was their prior legal background? The fact of the matter is that most judges are former prosecutors. So they were part of law enforcement. So we have a whole branch of government that is made up predominantly of law enforcement officers, prior district attorneys, prosecutors, that are then making decisions about people's freedoms and people's livelihoods, their ability to keep their children. Those are the folks that are in positions of power. By and large, the judiciary is made up of white men with a prosecutorial background who are making these decisions, who don't have the lived experience necessarily of the people that are coming before them. And on the policy side, myself, Unices Hernandez, the co-founder of La Defensa, we had been doing a lot of work around pretrial liberation. And so pretrial is the phase in criminal proceedings when someone has been charged, but has not been convicted of a crime. So they're being accused of something, but under California law, they are legally innocent. But yet judge after judge is incarcerating legally innocent people inside of our local jails without a conviction, because they have the discretion to do that. Judges have an immense amount of power to interpret law and to decide whether someone should be incarcerated even before they have a conviction. And so we saw that there was a gap in our ecosystem in Los Angeles County, and really across the country, more and more folks are taking on this issue of judicial accountability and transparency, because for so many decades, they've gone under the radar. And it's how the right has been able to mobilize their base and get conservatives into judgeship, because across the country, most folks are able to vote for a judge at some point. So there's the appointment process, but there's also the election process. And so here in Los Angeles County, we are able to elect and reconfirm judges that have been appointed. But most folks, again, don't know anything about judges. And so we wanted to create a platform where the community is able to provide information on the judges in our county. And then that information can be available publicly to anyone in LA County. So when they go to vote, they know who they're voting for.
So if judges across the country were elected in the way that judges, say, in LA County are, and if they were being held accountable using tools like Rate My Judge, would that be enough to hold judges accountable? If not, if you, like others, want to see the judiciary as a whole alongside policing and prisons be abolished, why? Why isn't it enough to reform the judiciary, shine a light on it so that it does what it's supposed to do?
Well, the thing is, the judiciary was built to extract our community members. That's what it's supposed to do. It's actually doing what it was designed to do, to extract poor people, Black people, immigrant people, people with mental health needs, people that are not considered part of what white supremacy would like to include in the people. And so it's functioning the way it's supposed to. What we're trying to do with Rate My Judge and empowering voters to make more informed decisions is a form of harm reduction. So we want to expose what they're doing. It's a first step in informing our community members that they do have some power, some leverage point over judges, exposing that their behavior is contributing to incarceration and systems of harm in our communities. The next step is to disempower the judiciary altogether. So stripping the judiciary of the power that they have. Right now, as I mentioned, they have really broad discretion to hold people incarcerated. So part of abolishing the judiciary is starting to contract its purviews, starting to contract its power. And that can be achieved through policy measures, of course. And so that can be state, local, state, and policy measures that start limiting the power and discretion of the judiciary. So pretrial is a really good example. The judiciary is able to hold someone incarcerated without a conviction. But if there was legislation that limited the instances and the circumstances in which a judge can hold someone in jail without a conviction, that would help reduce the power of the judiciary. So we want to contract, we want to expose, and we also want to contract their power simultaneously. And I think part of our abolitionist approach is both harm reduction, so really putting eyes in the courtroom so judges know they're being watched. This month, we're actually launching our Court Watch campaign. We've adopted Court Watch from the National Lawyers Guild, who has been holding it down for a very long time. Now we're integrating that component into Rate My Judge. So it's not just community reviews of their experiences in the courtroom. It's also our court watchers in the courtroom that will be documenting judicial behavior. So when you know that there's eyes on you, there is a push to actually course correct behavior. So that's the harm reduction component. On the policy side, we need change in the state of California that contracts the power of the judiciary. And I would say that can be and should be iterated across the country.
So chipping away at the power of the courts, shining a light on the courts, all of those with the ultimate goal of abolishing the judiciary. In your mind, is there a value that judiciary could perform, say, to hold the powerful accountable? I'm thinking of white collar criminals, corporate criminals, politicians who abuse their power. The judiciary, you're right, was not really designed to hold the powerful accountable, but can it be redesigned to do that?
Well, part of the beauty of abolition is the space to reimagine what accountability looks like. And, you know, what you're referencing, Sonali, is so important, being able to use the law to protect people against power, to protect the vulnerable against corporations and institutions. That's what our system should be doing, but it was fundamentally not designed to do that. And so part of the reimagining of accountability is to think about how we can create those systems of accountability that are independent from the structures that were designed to oppress us. And so I think the idea of maintaining a power structure and then telling that power structure, wait, you've been doing this harmful thing for generations. We want you to be doing this other thing. Would be a very difficult undertaking to maintain the same structures, the same people, but ask them to have a different mission. And so fundamentally, constructing something that we don't have to dismantle in the future is a fundamental principle of abolition. So constructing something from the ground up that is rooted in community, rooted in justice, and rooted in protecting people is what we should be creating. And that can be independent from our current judicial systems.
So proactive rather than reactive. Create regulations that protect us from businesses and protect us from politicians' abuses, et cetera. Let's focus on resources. The slogan of defund the police is one that many people are familiar with, and the idea is that police suck up far too many resources from our city budgets, and those programs that actually keep us safe are always starved for resources. Does the judiciary similarly suck up disproportionate resources?
Absolutely. The budgets for the judiciary have been climbing for the last 20 years, and the increases in judicial spending are reflected in the expansion of our criminal legal system and mass incarceration. So, for example, since the 80s, we've had this steep increase in the number of people that are placed in prison and jails. That means that more people are moving through the court system. So the approach of the court system has been efficiency. We want to move folks in really, really quickly. And so that requires resources. It's essentially a line of production for incarceration. And at the heart of it, are our courts. And so funding into our court system to move folks more quickly into prison and jail has been steadily increasing. Whereas where we could see more funding placed that could actually help alleviate that is in court diversion, actually spending money in providing mental health clinicians that can do an assessment in the courtroom to see if someone is even prepared to stand trial or should be instead receiving mental health support. Those are the types of resources that we should see, but instead we're seeing it in law enforcement personnel. We're seeing it in the salaries of judges, which are incredibly high. I encourage your listeners to Google what the going salaries are for judges in your local county. These are folks that are making an extreme amount of money, are not held accountable. The most that they can get when they are in violation of their own internal systems is a slap on the wrist. And so we're seeing so much money go into a system that can't be held accountable by the system that they are sworn to uphold.
Yvette, a lot of folks around the country are increasingly realizing that the highest court in the nation is broken and corrupt. We see corruption on the Supreme Court. We see the Supreme Court handing down decision after decision that undoes progressive legislation and overturns earlier precedents, which has a very, very real impact on our lives, you know, from labor rights to LGBTQ rights to women's reproductive rights and more. And I'm wondering if, and so there are calls to either expand the court, there are even some calls to do away with the Supreme Court altogether. Is there a way, do you see that focus on the Supreme Court and its corruption as an opening for a broader discussion on the judiciary as a whole, down to local judges.
Absolutely. So one thing that folks should understand around the Supreme Court is that there are pipelines. There are pipelines all the way up to the Supreme Court, which the right has been very astute about leveraging for decades now. And so judges that are serving at the local level may be appointed to a court on the federal level, which may open up the possibility for them to then be appointed to the Supreme Court. And so there's this prosecutor to judge pipeline into local judgeship, into federal judgeship, into the Supreme Court. And so when we look at the composition of the Supreme Court, its attack on our bodies, particularly for gender marginalized folks, we can feel powerless. You know, we don't have the power to appoint the Supreme Court. The president does. And if the elections didn't go our way, as we saw with the previous administration, it could open the door for our rights to be rolled back.
And we have three conservative judges that the Trump administration, that Donald Trump appointed. 3 out of 9, 1/3 of the court has been appointed by one of the most corrupt presidents in history.
It's mind-boggling how one administration can have such a long-lasting impact on our
and they're young judges with lifetime appointments.
Exactly, Sonali. And so we need to look at this from not just what's happening right now at the moment, but also look at the trajectory of the Supreme Court and also our civil liberties in the long term. We're talking about 25, 50 years ahead, because that's what the conservatives did. They played the low and slow game. They were covert. They really focused on packing courts at every level. And so that's something that we as progressives, as abolitionists, need to start playing that chess game of disruption of the judiciary, which I will say part of our strategy for engaging in judicial elections, because La Defensa also has a PAC. And through our PAC, we were able to elect the first Black woman public defender to the LA County Superior Court last year. And so part of our strategy was disruption. So
can you give us the name of that person?
Yes, Holly Hancock. We're so proud that Holly Hancock was elected. And this summer, we're creating a judicial academy for those that are interested in running for judgeship, so we can train potential candidates that are underrepresented on the LA County Superior Court on how to run, how to be a candidate. So we're very excited about that. So we're starting to plant the seeds of what we want to see moving forward. And it has to start local. And it can start small and still have a big impact. Here in LA County, we are one of the largest, if not the largest counties in the country, with one of the largest budgets that provides one of the largest budgets for law enforcement, for our sheriff's department. And so by investing in changing our local county, it can have reverberating effects, not just to other counties, but at the national level. I would love to see Judge Holly Hancock appointed to higher court and to be on the Supreme Court. But ultimately, we want to reduce the scope and power of the Supreme Court to have material impacts on our lives, on our individual freedoms. That is critical, because One high-level court should not be stripping an entire nation of people of their civil liberties.
And our court system wasn't made for people like Holly Hancock to take power. And if that were to happen, you would see the backlash. Well, finally, Yvette, what would a world without judiciary, without policing, without prisons look like for you? Because that envisioning, that world building is such an important part of realizing the hard work that it's going to take to move resources away, chip away at power, and eventually, you know, abolish these systems that have harmed so many.
Yes, that's such a great question, Sonali. For me, And an abolitionist world is a world that centers everybody's humanity, that centers the experiences of those most marginalized, that understands that your individual wellness and health and happiness is interconnected with everyone around you, and that the systems reflect those values, that those values of interconnectivity, interdependence, the values that we don't build things that we have to destroy in the future, and that we're able to center the rights, the wellness, and the sustenance of our environment alongside the wellness of our individual community members.
Give out a website for La Defensa.
Yes, it's ladefensa.org. I also would love your listeners to check out ratemyjudge.la.
And that's at ratemyjudge.com?
Ratemyjudge.la.
.la. We'll post links to those from our website. Yvette, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much, Sonali.
My guest has been Yvette Ale Ferlito, an abolitionist movement leader and co-founder and executive director of La Defensa. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. You can access this and other interviews on our website, risingupwithsonali.com, by becoming a subscriber. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify, and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.